Hello, and welcome to another episode of Rim Objects Radio. In this episode, I interviewed Drew McCormick and his experiences with using Core Data and iCloud syncing. Due to a series of unfortunate events, this podcast is actually quite delayed. It was recorded quite a while ago with Drew, back before the latest iOS releases, so some things may have changed, but there's still quite a bit of good information in here as far as implementing Core Data and iCloud syncing. Joining me today is Drew McCormick of the Mental Faculty. Thanks for joining me today, Drew.
No problem. Thanks for having me, actually.
Absolutely. You want to tell us real quick about the Mental Faculty and your products?
Sure, yeah. I'm a indie developer, so there's just one person basically in the Mental Faculty. I sometimes get in other developers to do some work, but mostly it's just me. And I develop software for the iPhone, for the Mac, mostly in the area of education and possibly in the future in the scientific field as well. My background is actually as a scientist. So I was a scientist until about 3 years ago, and I had a hobby of developing for the Mac, and that, of course, when the iPhone came along, that generated some income, and so I was able to give my day job and start this little company. The main product that we make is called Mental Case. It's a study app. It's for students, basically. If you think of a flashcard app on steroids, then you've pretty much got Mental Case. I make that product both on the Mac and on the iPhone and on the iPad as well.
Okay, excellent. And so you also have a book on OS X Snow Leopard programming?
Yeah, I wrote a book with Mike Trent a few years ago. Originally for, I think it was Tiger. It was a long time ago, actually, now, when I think about it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Originally for Tiger, 10.4. And then we did a second edition, and that was for Snow Leopard. And we decided after that not to do any more. But yeah, so that was before even the iPhone was around. So it was when I was developing for the Mac only at that time.
It's like prehistoric times.
Prehistoric, it was. They should have named the it shouldn't have been Tiger. It should have been Sabretooth or something like that.
That's right.
Really was prehistoric.
So the reason I'd ask you on today is you did a series of articles about your experiences in adding Core Data with iCloud syncing to your Mental Case app on your blog. And you just kind of outlined how to do it, what were some of the challenges and stuff like that, and your experiences with that. So I just want to get you on today and talk more about what you found in using Core Data iCloud syncing and what kind of advice you can give to people that are looking to go that direction.
Yeah, I've been using Core Data, I guess, for 5 or 6 years now. It started with Mental Case version 1, which was, I think, 2006 for the Mac. And ever since then, every project I've used Core Data. In the beginning, Core Data can have a bit of a steep learning curve. There are definitely some gotchas that you can run aground if you don't know what you're doing. But I think once you've got used to it, it's quite a powerful technology. It makes it quite easy to basically manage your data and save it to disk and do things like undo management and whatnot. So okay. one of the things, of course, that came in, what was it? In Lion, wasn't it? 10.7, was iCloud. And one of the big promises that Apple made at that time was that with Core Data, you've got a managed framework, so they can, in theory, determine incremental sync changes. So in theory, you should be able to sync through iCloud using Core Data. And as a developer, you shouldn't have to do very much. The framework should be able to figure that out. So it sounded great. And I've actually supported syncing for a long time in my Mental Case app because, like I said, I've got a version for the Mac and a version for iPhone and a version for iPad. The syncing I've been doing has just been Wi-Fi syncing. So it's a bit like what iTunes currently does, syncing your music to your iPhone, basically, the way it can sync over Wi-Fi.
So basically, if you had your MacBook and your iPhone on the same Wi-Fi, the app would just push the data back and forth?
Right, exactly. It wasn't quite that automatic. What you would do is it was just like iTunes, really, where you would select select the iPod and then say, okay, sync. And it would start syncing, and it would take a few minutes usually. So it wasn't something that sort of was, there was no server. It was just over the air, and this worked pretty well, but people these days start to, they expect a server side, a cloud solution where they don't have to constantly be thinking about, I need to sync before I go to work, or I need to sync before I go on that trip, so it was okay for a few years. And when I heard about iCloud, it sounded like the way forward. Something that every user would have. That's a big bonus. I mean, you already had Dropbox and things like that, but the trouble with Dropbox is that not every user has it. You'd have to send some people out to the internet to sign up. The promise of iCloud, of course, is that everyone has 5 gig of storage, and in theory, you can sort of assume that it'll be there. And of course, Apple's paying the bill. As a developer, you don't have to set up a server or whatever. So it sounds great. It sounded great at the time, and that's what I decided to do to try to move the Mental Case apps to iCloud. And yeah, so that's where the story sort of goes south.
Now, I know when iCloud was introduced, the idea was that you'd have this authority in the cloud, as it were, that would be the ultimate authority would be the cloud, and then all the desktop and the iPhone, et cetera, would be clients of this cloud authority. Is that how it turns out, or how did you find that it actually works?
It's actually very similar to say Dropbox, even though maybe it doesn't seem that way. What it is really is just a synced folder. It's a folder in your library, on your Mac or on your iPhone, that gets called. It's actually called the iCloud container. I think that's what the terminology is. So that gets synced up across all devices, and in that sense, it's very similar to what Dropbox is doing. If you imagine Dropbox just syncing a single folder across all of your devices, that's what iCloud is basically doing. And so if you add if a file is added on your iPhone to that folder, some daemon will see that and will copy it up onto the servers of iCloud. And then of course the other devices, your Mac, for example, will then download that file and put it in the same folder. So in that sense, it's very, very similar to Dropbox. If you think of Dropbox, you've pretty much got iCloud, except that Apple doesn't publish, make this folder publicly accessible. It's really just for apps to put things in. So that's the big difference. It's not actually something that a user would put things in. It's something that an app would put things in.
And then each app has its own folder within the iCloud folder. So there's a security in there. You're not going to be able to go in.
No, you can't. As far as I know, you can't write to other apps folders. No, certainly with sandboxing, it's enforced that you can only write to your own iCloud container. So yeah, okay. Each app has its own. You could imagine. You could say each app has its own Dropbox folder. That's the way you could think about it. So in theory, it sounds quite good. The actual syncing of files between the different devices works reasonably well, I would say. If you put a file on one device in that container, usually in a minute or two, it'll appear on the other devices. So if you've got a document-based app, which just works with files like that, I think it actually works reasonably well. And I think you're starting to see apps that appear that are based on documents, like text editors, for example, where they are getting the iCloud to work properly and work quite well. The problem for me was that I don't have a document-based app. I've got what you call a shoebox app. That is, it's basically like iTunes. You throw things into one big library, and what I needed to do was sync that across multiple devices. And that meant using iCloud, using Core Data syncing. And that part of the equation doesn't work very well. It's actually a very difficult problem that they're trying to solve, and they're trying to solve it in a way that doesn't give the developer any sort of input. They're trying to do it as a black box, with very little sort of feedback to the developer or delegates or whatever you want to call them. It just is a black box. They don't say exactly how the sync happens. They don't say what they do with conflicts. So as a developer, you're sort of in the, a bit in the dark and trying to guess what they're doing and what how conflicts will be resolved and you know, if there's a validation problem, what happens then? And there are always different corner cases that can go wrong. And Apple have, you know, not given us many tools to resolve these things. So you can really bang your head for months. Literally, I've spent months on trying to get this to work because it's very difficult to test as well. You have to set up two machines. You have to make a change on one machine. Then you have to wait. And then, you know, a few minutes later, hopefully, the change will appear on the second machine. And if there's something goes wrong, then you have to try to do that all again and try to catch it in the debugger or whatever. So it's a very, very tedious programming. So I've literally, it's probably been one of the hardest development projects I've done for years, actually, maybe ever. It's been,
wow,
been quite difficult because it's all asynchronous. You can never tell exactly when the sync's going to happen, when the file is going to appear, when it's going to be imported. Whether there'll be conflicts, things like that. So I think
that you had said at the start of your blog post that you'd only found what was it, one other app that was using Core Data iCloud syncing.
Yeah, at that time, I haven't actually don't know of any others since either. There was one app called Time Butler that was using it, and I had a bit of contact with the developer, and it seemed to be working okay. But it seems like it's a very simple data model, and I think the syncing, iCloud syncing maybe works okay if, for example, you don't have any relationships in your model, or if it's just very simple, one entity or a couple of entities but no relationships, then it should work okay because, you know, you can't get really serious conflicts happening. It's just property values that are being synced up. But my model is quite complex. Lots of relationships and, I was running into every possible problem that could arise, and it seemed like Apple probably haven't really tested really significant data models before, because I mean even the sample code from WWDC is really quite simple. It's just one entity and no relationships at all. So I think if you've got a very simple app, it can work. But if you've got a real app that's, you know, from the real world, if you know what I mean, not a utility, but, you know, you've got something, a productivity app or something, then you're going to run into more trouble. So the only other app I know that is supposedly coming with iCloud support and is similar to my app is Yojimbo from Barebones. So I'm really quite interested to see. Supposedly they've submitted that already to the App Store, but it hasn't appeared yet. I'm really interested to see how they've done it, whether they've used Apple's framework or whether they've had to roll their own framework. So we'll have to wait and see about that. But that's quite a significant app, Yojimbo.
So you said that the way iCloud works is that you put a file in the folder and then the file gets pushed to other devices.
Right.
So when you're using iCloud syncing, how does the data translate into a file that gets pushed to other apps, other devices?
Right. Well, it's what happens is with SQLite, it's not very useful to, or you know, it's very difficult or whatever to just put the SQLite database in that folder and then have that sync up. And to begin with, that would be quite a lot of data. And secondly, you would have problems perhaps with locking the database so that you wouldn't get data corruption. So a better approach is to basically sync the changes, the deltas. So if you make a change to the database, it generates what's called a transaction log, which is basically just, this property changed to this value, this relationship changed to this value. Just the changes, and they go into a file it's just a property list. It's just a zipped up property list. And then the other devices will read that back in and then apply those same changes to the local database, or the local Core Data store. So, if you change property called X into the number 5, then it will be written away as a property list. and then it will go through the cloud to another device, and the other device will read back in the change. It will see X should be changed to 5, and it will make that change. And so it's reasonably straightforward. It has some, you know, it has advantages that you're only syncing exactly, you know, the smallest amount of data you can possibly sync. That is the actual, what actually changed, not the whole database. So yeah, that's in a nutshell how it works. It writes away these plist, which are transaction logs, and iCloud uploads them and then downloads them to other devices. And those other devices then see these files, these new files, and then they read them in and import them. So actually, the iCloud part, the core data part of the syncing doesn't, as far as I can tell, have any communication with the cloud at all. It just observes the files in this directory, this special container, and when a new file appears, it will read that in. And when core data saves, it will generate new transaction logs and put them into that file, into that folder.
So it sounds straightforward for the simple case. What happens when you start having more complex data with relationships and such?
Well, of course, yeah, the main problem there is that you can, it all works fine, I think, if there are no conflicts. But you can get conflicts, of course. And so, for example, if your iPhone is, you know, on airport mode, you know, if it hasn't got a network access for a while, then you turn it back on, it could be that you made some changes on your Mac, that conflict with changes on your iPhone. For example, and say you change the same relationship on both devices. Now it's possible then that you end up with validation issues. Once it imports that change in one of the devices, the object graph is no longer valid. That you've got validation rules, for example, and these are no longer valid. And Apple give you no way to really fix that. So in the end, I had to actually turn off all of my validation rules and try to sort of scan, to sort of like do a cleanup operation after every merge to look for objects that shouldn't be there anymore, basically, which is not really desirable. I mean, the whole idea of having validation rules in your core data entity model is that it will catch problems for you effectively, but I effectively had to turn off all of the validation to make it work. Otherwise, it just would, you know, if it was a conflict, you would just lose data or it would never recover. It would just, there were a few cases where it would just stop syncing altogether. It just could not get past, a particular transaction log, and it would just sit there forever. And that would be the end of the sync. Basically, it would never sync again.
Wow.
Yeah. So that sort of stuff is deadly. I mean, you really don't want that. And shipping that to customers would not only be really annoying for them, it would be a nightmare for support. Imagine dealing with the support questions you would get from people that just say, oh, the syncing's not working, or, you know, that sort of thing. So it was pretty bad.
From a support point of view, how can you help with something like that happens?
Well, all you could do is presumably just you'd have to tell them to zap their data, basically, which you can do. Basically, they'd have to, yeah, either you have to build that into your app, the app will can somehow zap the data, get rid of it, and start again, or the user would have to do that inside system preferences or whatever.
Kind of the nuclear option there.
It's definitely a nuclear option. Yeah, there's no other way really. When it got stuck like that, it was there wasn't much choice.
So when you have the change logs going back and forth, is there one that's kind of the authority, or is it completely distributed, or how does that work as far as which core data is in charge?
Yeah, there's really no truth. So that's a bit different to say Mobile Me, which syncing, which we used to have. No, there's no one device that has the truth really. It's just iCloud acts as like a messaging, almost like a messaging framework. It just allows you to send files from one device to another. That's all it is. There's no intelligence in the actual server. It's just in terms of Core Data, at least, all it is a device, is a server that takes files from one machine to another and back again. So it's completely up to the Core Data frameworks on each device to do their best to import the changes and export changes, and just write them to file, basically, not actually even upload them, just write them to file and let the iCloud syncing copy the files. So there is no truth, and that is actually what makes it very difficult, I think. So what they're trying to do is very difficult, but I think it would have been a lot easier if they gave us as developers some access to the process, some idea of how the sync is actually happening, how they merge conflicts, things like that. But there's no indication at all, for example, if a relationship changes on two devices, how they actually decide what to keep and what not to keep. There's no indication at all about that. And so it makes it very difficult as a developer to know what to expect. And it would be even better if they had hooks, which allowed us to actually influence the merging process. If something does fail, if validation does fail, we could fix it as developers in our code, but we never get that option. It's a truly a black box. Apple's trying to do it all on their own, which is a nice sentiment, but in practice, it's not working very well.
So my experience has been when there's a black box that means one of two things, either A, that they're just saying, hey, it's so simple, it just works, or B, they're saying, we may change this in the future, so we're not going to tell you how it works. Which camp do you think this is in?
It could be both, actually. I'm not sure. I think they did want to make something that was just so simple and worked out of the box, but this is very, very far from that. It's actually much harder than if they had quite a detailed API. I would much prefer the detailed API and a few more hooks. Maybe they also want the option of changing things in the future, but that would also be quite problematic if your app was built such that you expected mergers to happen in a certain way, conflicts to be resolved in a certain way, and all of a sudden that changed and you had no recourse, then that could also be very problematic. So I'm not sure what they're thinking, to be honest. I have a feeling that it was a bit rushed, that maybe, they worked on iCloud and they got the file syncing working okay. And then maybe at the last minute they said, oh, maybe we should, you should add some Core Data syncing or something. And it seems like that bit hasn't been fully hashed out and well tested. And Apple's, as far as I know, aren't using it much themselves. Perhaps they're using it for the Reminders app or something like that, but certainly not for a really big app, important app. So, yeah, it's difficult to know what they're thinking. I have a feeling it was a bit rushed in the beginning, but you would think that by now with Mountain Lion it would all be sorted. As far as I can tell, it's not sorted out. So
now you've been working on this for a while now, and you said you're just what's the status of it right now? Actually, your implementation of this.
Oh, I mean, the last week or so, I think I've finally got something that I could send out to customers. It's stable enough. But how have I done that? What I've had to do is actually drop completely Apple's framework. I am using Core Data, of course. But I have actually had to adopt an open source framework for the syncing, and it still goes through iCloud, but it handles all of the transaction logs rather than Apple's framework. And the advantage of that is that it's open source, so it's transparent. I can see exactly how the merges are happening. I can debug if there's a problem. Which is none of this is possible, of course, if you're using the built-in Apple framework. And the other thing is it just seems to work better. It just seems to work in most situations. So in the end, that's what I've done. That's a framework, by the way, that was developed by Tim Isted and, was later improved by Michael Fay. It's on GitHub. So if anyone wants to to download that, they can. I've forked it so that I've made special changes just for use in iCloud, because previously it was actually a Dropbox syncing framework. And I updated that to support iCloud. And that seems to be working. So I've tested that on the iPhone. I've tested that on the Mac. It's all working to my satisfaction. So I've finally submitted my syncing app to the App Store for review. We'll see how that goes. But so that was very disappointing that I had to, in the end, I was really pinning my hopes on Mountain Lion and iOS 6. And when I tested on Mountain Lion, it actually, some things even just got worse. So I was very, very disappointed with that. And so then I spent 2 or 3 weeks just shifting the whole thing to this other framework.
So that's disappointing, I guess. I'm sure reading through your blog post here, you really had provided the authoritative dissection of how Core Data iCloud syncing works, and then you just decided it wasn't worth all the trouble, huh?
Yeah. I mean, in the end, it just, well, I was really sort of hoping that it would work with Mountain Lion. It was working okay on Lion. Some things actually got worse in Mountain Lion. And, I wrote that series of articles, and at that time I was pretty convinced that I would eventually get there. And it just, there were just some things that just, like, for example, you would put a note in a folder, and on the other device, it would not be in the folder. You know, the change, was somehow ignored by the framework. It's hard to know exactly what's happening because you don't have access to their source code. And that's exactly the problem, really. It's, you've got no insight at all as to what they're doing. There was no conflict or anything. It was just, you make a new note on one machine. It should appear in a certain place on another machine, and it didn't. And of course, you can't ship that. You just can't ship it. So, and you've got no recourse. There's nothing you can really do other than report the bug to Apple and then wait for another year, which is effectively what you do have to do. I mean, any bugs reported now will be in 10.9, basically. Any fixes will be in 10.9. They rarely ship upgrades as major as iCloud Core Data upgrade, a whole framework upgrade like that in a point release. That's quite rare.
So it sounds like the problems come down to the fact that sounds like sometimes the syncing doesn't happen at all. Other times, if there's a conflict, then it just bails and there's no recourse on resolving it. Mm-hmm. What else? What other issues did you run into?
I think they're the major ones. I mean, you can work around, for example, the validation problem where if you've got a conflict that doesn't validate anymore, you can work around that by removing the validation, like I did. It's not desirable, but you can do it. But the main thing in the end, the thing that I could not work around was simply effectively losing data. I mean, a transaction log just goes missing or is wrongly imported. For example, like I said, you make a new note, you put it in a certain folder in your app, and all of a sudden it appears on the other device. There's a new note, but it's not inside the folder. So something's being lost there in the transaction log. There's a bug, and you can't work around that in any way. And it's unacceptable to ship that to customers. So, that was the last straw for me. And at that point I decided, well, even if a third party framework is not, the developers haven't spent as much time on it as maybe Apple have, at least I've got the source code, and if there's a problem, I can fix it. And I can see exactly how the merge should happen, or if there's a conflict, how the conflict should be resolved. And I've got a lot more hooks. The framework itself that I'm using now actually calls back and says, okay, I've done this and I'm about to do that. And that's very useful. Whereas the Apple's framework does very little in terms of that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, they were the main things, but it simply doesn't work, at least for a reasonably complex model. I think if you've just got one entity, it works, but if you've got relationships, you're going to run into problems at some point.
Now, with this other system you went to, how does that deal with the fact that sometimes you put something into the cloud, it sounds like you're saying, and then it just doesn't sync across?
That's becoming less and less of a problem, I would say. I think most of the time iCloud, that syncing of files works okay, actually. Yeah, I found that works quite well. So if you write a transaction log on one machine, on one device, it does actually get copied across okay.
Okay.
So that's the lesser of the problems. The greater problem was simply in the core data framework itself, which does the importing and the exporting of these transaction logs, and just not having any access at all to conflict resolution or validation failures, or basically having no recourse if something goes wrong, and also having, you know, with Mountain Lion, these horrible bugs that just meant even if there wasn't a conflict, it would still fail to correctly reproduce the data. So, yeah, that was the main problem. The actual syncing of files works okay. So that's exactly what I'm doing now. I am using iCloud. I'm not using Dropbox, but I'm just using the syncing of the file aspect. And the new framework that I'm using is actually, it works very similar to what Apple is doing. It just generates transaction logs exactly the same way, incremental changes, and writes them as files, and then they get synced across. So it's doing the same thing. The main difference is that I've got the code, basically. That's the big difference.
Mm-hmm. So how long did it take you to implement it with this new system?
Well, I did have to start from scratch. No one had ever tested the framework with iCloud before. So it was a Dropbox syncing framework. So what I did first was to actually just try it out with iCloud. So I just literally pointed, you know, instead of pointing at Dropbox, I pointed at the container, the iCloud container, and was quite surprised that it worked reasonably well straight away. So then I spent more time. I used what are called NS file coordinators and NS file presenters, which are the sort of new things in Lion that help you work with files. It's sort of a locking mechanism for files. If you're working with iCloud, you really need to if you're working in the iCloud container, you really need to use these things. So I added those just to make sure that everything was okay in that sense. And probably, within a week, I probably had things syncing a bit. And it's probably been 3 weeks now from, and I've got the whole thing working. So I think someone could download this framework and start working in a week or two. They could probably have something working.
Okay. So what are the limitations though, as far as iCloud goes, or with this system, or using the core data iCloud syncing for your app? In what situations would this not work for you anymore?
That's a good question. I guess if you've got a real lot of data, I've got quite a reasonable amount of data, because my app stores media files like images and audio. It's not as much media as say iTunes, but it is possible, for example, to add images to your flashcards, and that has to be synced up, of course. So it's not like the contacts address book or anything like that. It's more data than those sort of apps. Mm-hmm. But it's doable with what I've got. I don't think you'd want to say sync up iTunes that way. It'd just be way too much data. You've got to remember that all this data has to go over the network. It has to be uploaded and then downloaded. So if you've got a 20 gig iTunes library, then it's probably not going to work very well. I would say that in my app, most of the libraries would be less than a gig, less than 1 gigabyte, and that's doable. If you have 500 megabytes of data, even it's going to take a while to sync up. At least the first sync will take a while. And then after, of course, it's incremental, so it should be okay. There's that, and of course, it's the same with any core data project. It's a single user thing, so it's not as though you can share data or anything. It's just a syncing. It's basically for syncing up data. It's not for sharing so much. You can't have multiple users accessing the same database or anything like that. It's just a syncing mechanism.
Okay. Is the does this new system give you the option to set up a source of truth that everything else syncs against, or is it still purely distributed?
No, it's purely distributed. So I don't know the technical term, but I understand that in the database world, there's a technical term where you've got basically double-ended or something like that. It's there's no single truth. It's basically just a bunch of clients, effectively peer-to-peer type situation where they're trying to reconcile things amongst themselves. So so you might make a change on one device, it goes to the other device, it tries to import it, it can't import it, so then it has to tell the first device, I guess, through files, you know, that it should unwind the change or something like that. It's a tricky problem because sometimes, yeah, if your device is offline for a while, these changes could be out of order as well. I mean, you could make changes on the Mac, and then when your iPhone comes back online, changes that you made hours ago will all of a sudden be available to the Mac, and the Mac has to try to figure out, yeah, did my changes, should my changes take precedence, or should the iPhone's changes take precedence? So it's actually a really tricky problem that they're trying to solve, and so it's kind of understandable that they have trouble, but it would be nice if there were hooks to allow us to work around things when they don't go well, and there are very few hooks. So that's the main problem, I would say, with the whole situation.
Do you use date timestamps in order to resolve precedence or order of operations, or what did you end up going to do that?
You mean in the new framework or in iCloud? See, I don't know how exactly Apple do that, but I think they probably do look at timestamps.
So in iCloud, with the iCloud one, you don't, or the coordinated iCloud syncing, you really don't have any.
You have no say at all about that. So,
it just guesses for you.
Everything is guessed. There is no, you don't get told, I'm about to resolve this conflict. Which one do you want to keep? You don't get that option. It's just, it'll make a choice somehow. It's not clear how. And, probably it's based on timestamps. I don't know, but no one really knows that exactly. Apart from people in Apple, I guess. And yeah, so you don't, all that you get told is, it's a bit like doing an import of a file or something. So all you get, when everything is done, you get notification and it says, okay, we changed your, store. That's pretty much it. And you have to, okay, these are the things that changed. But it doesn't give you any more information than that. It just says, okay, here's some new objects. Here's some old objects that we deleted. But a lot of the problems actually occur before that. For example, when there's a conflict, that's already happened, that conflict resolution's already happened at that stage once it that notification. So you've got very little recourse. It's just like, I coordinator changes things behind your back and then tells you, okay, I changed things. And that's it. You have no say.
With the new system you went with, how did you come up with a mechanism to resolve conflicts when things could come, like you said, with something's iPhone's in airplane mode and you get data changes queued up and changes maybe come out of order and stuff like that?
Well, in the framework from the Dropbox framework, I'll call it that, that already had some delegate callbacks that would inform you that there's a conflict, for example. If it detected a conflict, then it would actually ask you which one do you want to keep. So you can actually choose. You can always choose. You can choose you can choose which one you want to keep. It's kind of a simple framework. I'm guessing that Apple's algorithm is more advanced than what is used in this Dropbox framework. The Dropbox framework basically doesn't really look so much at timestamps. It just tries to import changes as they arrive. So, and of course that could fail sometimes, but it'll handle that reasonably gracefully, and you at least get an opportunity to influence that process. So for example, if your iPhone was offline for 2 days, then the Mac would just see a whole bunch of changes coming in at once and would just try to apply them, and if it worked, it would work, and if it didn't work, it didn't work. But at least, yeah, you can influence that and make sure that it's something reasonable comes out of it. Whereas with Apple, it's just a bit of voodoo, really. You don't know what they're doing, and sometimes it fails, and you don't know why it's failed, and you've got no way to influence and to try to fix that failure. You've just lost data, basically. So even though the framework I'm using now is kind of simple-minded, I guess you could say, it just simply applies changes, deltas, and it doesn't really look so much at timestamps or anything. It just, as they come in, and tries to apply them. It seems to work most of the time, and that's for me more important than something that maybe is more advanced algorithm, but can completely fail at times, and then fails to sync, or has a showstopper failure where it stops syncing. That's just unacceptable in my view.
Yeah. So did you find you had to put a lot of extra code in there to help it resolve conflicts that it wasn't able to resolve on its own, or how did you deal with that?
No, I didn't try really to do anything really advanced. All I did was to accept the I simply gave it permission to say that the local copy was the one that should get precedence. That's all I said. And like I say, that's not foolproof. That could mean that you sometimes get different data on different devices if you're in unlucky, I guess. But at least future changes can override that problem. So, for example, if you find that a change, if the things are slightly different on two different devices, then you could sort of force, make another change to force the two to be the same. Whereas that wasn't possible with iCloud with Chordata. Chordata would, if two things didn't match up on two devices, it could never get around that issue in future. It would just fail to sync. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, I'm not saying that the new framework is perfect. I mean, syncing is a very hard problem. I don't think it's actually probably impossible to come up with an algorithm that will work in every situation. And, what I like about what I've got now is that it's simple. I can understand how it's working. I can understand the cases where it won't work. And what I like about it is that even if it doesn't work in very specific cases, at least the user, it will go and keep syncing. It will keep syncing. That's important. And the user can make, can change, reapply a change effectively to sync the two devices up again, which was not the case with Chordata. Once the thing had failed, it was forever failed.
So it sounds like the new system fails gracefully and then gives you a little more visibility as far as hooks and stuff like that to be able to deal with stuff then.
I guess technically if you really wanted to make a very advanced system for resolving conflicts, you could. But I find just keeping things simple, it works in 99.9% of cases. And in the other case, at least things recover, if you know what I mean. It handles it reasonably gracefully, the user can at least keep syncing. And if they notice, for example, that a piece of data is slightly out of sync, they can force, make a new change that will override previous changes and force the two devices to sync up again.
So this would be like modifying the same field again, adding a space at the end, and hopefully it goes this time.
Exactly. Something like this. So imagine, for example, that, although it probably wouldn't happen at a property level, but imagine you made a change, conflicting changes to one field. You change someone's address on two different devices at the same time. And in a very specific situation, it's possible that the two won't be the same after the sync. If you wanted to get them the same again, all you'd have to do is, put a space and then delete it on one device. And that would then, make sure that would then fix the problem. So it's not ideal, but it's not bad. It's not terrible. You're not going to really lose a lot of data, or anything like that. And the syncing continues. All the other fields will keep syncing properly. It'll just be that one field that maybe has the problem, and you can fix that if you have to.
And it sounds like you've eliminated the need for the nuclear option of destroying all the data.
Right, yeah. I do actually still have an option to turn off syncing and then turn it back on, which then gives you the you know, puts up a dialogue, says, you know, do you want to replace all your sync data or do you want to import that? So I do have, effectively, I do have a nuclear option in case something really bad does happen, but I haven't, in my testing at least, I haven't come across any showstopper situations. But yeah, if it really was a problem, then I could say to a user, just turn off syncing and then turn it back on and then accept and just nuke the sync data basically by accepting the dialog. So that's sort of my, you know, that's the worst case scenario, but I don't expect to have to use that very often.
So with the way the iCloud works, you said everybody has a 5 gig iCloud storage.
Right.
And your database maybe is about a gig, but you're not actually restoring that entire database in the cloud, right? You're only storing the change logs. So you're not persisting in the cloud, or is that not correct?
The initial database is actually uploaded. So when I say it's a gig, that would be a very big database for my program. I think typically it's less than 100 megabytes for most people. And if you're only using text, which a lot of people just use text, they might be learning a language, for example. If you're just using text, then it might only be like, 10 megabytes. So what it does is it does upload the initial database, the whole database. And then after that, it stores the diffs, the deltas. So yes, you do need at least that much storage in iCloud. And of course, if someone did have a lot of data, then they would just have to buy more space from Apple, which you can do, of course. You're not restricted to 5 gigs. You can buy more. It's just you have to pay for it.
So it does end up persisting the entire database to the cloud, and then all the change logs, they remain in the cloud or they get removed after they're processed?
They remain there for a while, and then they say once a week I've got a vacuum process, which just goes through and looks and checks which deltas aren't needed anymore because they're on all devices. You've got to wait until all devices have the delta imported, and then you can remove it basically. So once a week it does a sort of like a vacuuming operation which removes old files, and so yeah, they're there for a while, but then they get cleaned up periodically, I guess you would say. But you've always got at least, you know, one full database in the cloud, which is the initial database, and then you've got a bunch of deltas from that.
Okay. How do you know if all the devices have received the delta before you vacuum it up?
That's just a question of the devices themselves looking at the deltas, and there's a sort of a management, you know, these files and a system for managing these files, which, you know, the framework itself has its own model, its own basically core data model itself, and it stores information about the files, and it knows which ones, for example, have been imported already and which ones haven't been. And using this sort of information, it can just determine, okay, I can see that all of them have been imported on that machine. You know, all of the devices in the cloud at the moment have already imported this delta, so that can be removed or whatever. So
okay.
It's just simply the framework itself that's doing all this. It's just keeping track of what's been imported, what hasn't been imported, and you know, there's quite a bit of file management there, but it's reasonably understandable what's happening.
So if I, let's say I have an iPod Touch that I'm currently using with this, and then I decide I'm not going to use it anymore and I put it in a drawer and don't ever turn it on again, will those change logs just remain there, or at some point does it say, hey, that guy's not coming back, let's quit waiting for him? Or?
Yeah. Well, at the moment, I actually, in my app, I've decided not to try to solve that problem. At the moment, though, that would be a bit of a problem because those change logs would hang around. In that case, someone could nuke their sync data with my app. But that's not a limitation actually of the framework. It's just my laziness at this stage. The framework does actually support removing devices. So it is possible to say to the framework, okay, remove this device And then all of the data associated with that device would be removed, and the vacuuming would get rid of, you know, would ignore it in future and whatnot. So it's not a limitation at all of the framework. It's just I haven't actually implemented that aspect in my own app yet. Probably will at some point.
So it would be a matter of seeing that somebody's get one of the devices getting way out of date and prompting the user, should we remove it, or how would you deal with that then?
Yeah. I guess you could show a list of devices to the user. Like you could, it's the same way, I guess, that iTunes does, right? I think iTunes has an option to view the registered devices or something like that, and then you can remove them. You could either offer a UI like that where the user could actually just choose to from a list and say remove, or you could have a system where the user just goes to their iPod Touch and turns off syncing, and at that point you just remove the data. Yeah, so it's just a question of how you want to implement that as a UI, I guess. It's but otherwise you will indeed have that data won't go away. It'll stick around in the future. You're right about that.
Well, thank you for your time, Drew. Is there anything else you'd like to mention here before we wrap this up?
I don't think so. I think that pretty much covers it. That's where we're at today. And hopefully, when 10.9 comes out, I can I can revisit core data syncing. But at this stage, in my view, it's not ready for prime time. At least if you've got a reasonably complex data model. If you've got a very simple data model, I think it's probably okay. But if you've got relationships and things like that, I think it's a bit early still. Even after a year, it's a bit early.
So a single entity like a high score list, that would probably be easy enough to do. But anything beyond that, you're looking for trouble.
It's, just an address book. It's probably simple enough. Reminders, like the reminders app that Apple has, to-do list, for example. It's probably simple enough. If it's just maybe one or two relationships, then maybe you can handle it. But anything more complicated, it's going to get pretty scary, I think. If you've got a reasonably detailed, I mean, I think my app's probably got, I'm guessing now, but I'm guessing between 20 and 30 entities, and lots of relationships there between them. So it's a bit scary. At least it didn't handle it at all well. And I don't think it's been, from what I gather, Apple hasn't really tested it very much with that sort of complexity.
Now, do you think, with 10.9, you may end up going back to the iCloud, or do you think you got a system you're going to stick with, or what do you think?
I think at this stage I'll probably stick with it, for at least for a few years, because it's a lot of work. Even if it was working completely flawlessly, I would still take a bit of work to backport to iCloud, to Core Data, so Core Data syncing rather. I'll probably leave it at least a few years and stick with this current solution. For that time. Hopefully in a few years' time, I'll be able to, maybe within the next major version of my app or something, I'll revert. But at this stage, I've just put in too much time already, and it's working, so I'm going to stick with it.
Okay. So if anybody's interested, they can check out Mental Cases already in the App Store today, but the syncing via iCloud will be coming out soon then, it sounds like.
I've submitted it to Apple. At the moment, the Mac App Store is very... the review times are really quite long, 2 or 3 weeks at the moment. So I don't expect it to be in the App Store for another 3 weeks, but after that it should be there, and so people can try it out. Unfortunately, I've got a demo app, but unfortunately iCloud syncing only works with Mac App Store apps. So you can download the demo, but it won't offer any syncing option because it can't. So you would have to buy the app if you wanted to try it out.
Wow. Okay.
So, it's a limitation that Apple sets themselves.
Yeah. If people want to find out more about you or Mental Faculty, where should they go?
Just mentalfaculty.com is the company website, and the app is at mentalcaseapp.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, Drew.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Absolutely. And I wish you luck with your update, and hopefully it all goes well.
I hope so too. Thanks.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Hope you've enjoyed this episode of RIM Objects Radio. For more information about Room Objects Radio and Room Objects Software, visit brimobjects.com.